Mays, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. We hope everybody is having a wonderful Friday. Derek Mason is live in Las Vegas. I can hear the music now. Derek Mason live from a rave?
Oh, yeah. As soon as I put up this this stream, you'll see what I'm doing.
Is it PG?
Yeah. Oh, it's all
This is a family show and stream.
Hey, listen, it's daytime, so it's PG.
Okay, but there are things during the daytime in Vegas that are not PG.
Correct.
You got a point there, Willie, but I do not condone those things.
Okay.
So how's Vegas treating you, Derek?
You know what? Vegas is treating me well, or us well. McCall and I are here. Treating us well. We came in, got in this morning, ran into Joe, Ricky, and, of course, Chase. And, you know, it's been wonderful, man. A lot of music, a lot of pools and televisions around here. And it's wonderful, man. And I got on a sweatshirt and some sweatpants. That should tell you something.
I feel like I need a glow stick or something just hearing the music that's on in the background there.
Hey, man, it's moving. It's music that it gets your tush moving.
Well, I guess we'll get your tushes moving today on the program. Derek,
yes.
Of course, is live in Las Vegas, as you can hear or see if you're watching the stream.
I don't know if we've ever had, like, continuous background music. I felt good about music today because I put the DJ tunes in the jukebox today for when we come back from breaks.
Okay. I know it's going to be cutting edge then.
It's cutting edge. We're going 80s techno pop today.
Oh, okay.
So there will be some synthesizer pounding away at you on a Friday afternoon. You're going home.
Kinda like this.
You're getting excited for Friday night. Yeah, this is a little more mellow. This is a little more modern. I'm going old school, 80s techno. Original synth.
Okay. I can't wait.
Is there a foam party going on over there? Are you familiar with the foam
people
party?
People jumping from the roof.
Tell me the foam party. What's going on with the foam party?
People jumping from the roof.
It's exactly what you think it is. It's
guys walking around in Speedos.
With lots of foam.
With lots of foam.
That's basically it.
So like bubbles floating from the sky?
Yeah.
Bubbles and the Technotronics.
I have never attended a foam party. I think I am past the age where it's appropriate to attend a foam party, which means it's definitely past the age for the two of you to attend
a
foam party. But we'll see what Derek Mason gets into between now and 6 o'clock Central. Derek has also told us he has a wild story to share with us, but I want him to wait until Ask D-Mace at 5 o'clock to tell us what that wild story is. Of course, at 5 o'clock with Ask D-Mace, if you have questions for Derek, you can call us and text us at 615-737-1025. But we are going to start on the Nashville Predators. No 0-5-0 start for the Predators this season. They win their season opener against the Columbus Blue Jackets last night at Bridgestone Arena, 2-1. Ryan O'Reilly with the game-winning power play goal early in the third period. Michael Bunting opened the scoring for the Predators in the first half of the first period. But, Willie, I want to start with UC Saros. UC Saros, I said on the show yesterday after you departed, in my opinion, UC Saros under the most pressure of any Predators player heading into this season after having his career worst season last year. His new 8-year contract starting last night in terms of the season. And I thought he was excellent. 37 saves on 38 shots. I'll get a little nerdy here. 2.2 goals saved above expected, which means he stole the game for the Predators. And I want to get your thoughts on Saros' play last night. But I also want to see if you and I saw the same thing. The Columbus Blue Jackets had plenty of high-danger scoring chances over the first couple of periods. But I did not see any of the glaring defensive breakdowns from the Predators that I saw last season. They limited the number of odd man rushes. And although UC Saros certainly did have to put in some work, I thought the Predators did a better job of defending and making the saves that he had to make more predictable. Did you see the same thing that I saw?
Yes, I did. And it is something that they have stressed. If you've been listening to our coverage leading up to the season, this has been one of several themes, and maybe the biggest one from a tactical standpoint. They wanted to defend differently and better than they did last year. So they are sacrificing some offense, I think, some puck possession, I think, in the name of not giving up the high-end gifts. Last year, it was Christmas from October all the way through April when they played. Way too many breakaways, two-on-ones, backdoor layups, things that shouldn't happen. Backdoor layups should be talked about in basketball, not very often in hockey. It does happen occasionally, but it happened way too much last year. They want to create, use the word, Adam, predictability. It was better last night. Now, that being said, Columbus is a high-powered offensive team. They on a lot of nights this year, if they're anything like they were last year, with that young talent, they've got 12 first-round picks in their lineup. And they've been, last I checked, they pick pretty high in the draft a lot of those years. They're going to score a lot but give up a lot. So for Nashville to hold them to one was a lot. But as you said, only two odd man rushes the entire game. They were among the worst in the league at allowing odd man rushes last year. They cut that number way down. So the dangerous chances, by and large, were chances that Saros was able to see and he was able to decipher, if you will. He knew where they were coming from. And when you allow him to connect the dots and play to his strengths, that's when he becomes an elite goalie. So it worked last night. It's one game out of 82. You've got a lot. You've got to do it again tomorrow night. But I think they got a glimpse, and they were not the better team 5-on-5, but you got a glimpse of how you can win hockey games if you have a really good goalie when you get outshot and you give up more chances than the opposition. It's the type of chances that mean a lot.
We saw yesterday what it should look like, or what it should have looked like last year to a certain extent. UC played fabulous. And I asked you guys, I text you guys, the probability of that shot going in had to be low. But it snuck in on UC Saros. And after that, I mean, he was on lockdown. He managed to be everywhere he needed to be at all times, and those guys helped him in front of him. But I think this is what we wanted to see last year. Obviously, more scoring, yeah, but those guys in the front helping UC Saros. UC Saros doing his job. Yes, they were able to get a goal, but, I mean, to me, that's a goal that the greatest of goalies would probably give up. So I don't look at it as, something wrong with UC Saros. But I think they did a lot to help him. I think he did a lot for himself last night. And I think what sort of symbolized it all to me was in the first period, Roman Josi hustling when it was a two-on-one break, and he hustles and he breaks the break up. That, to me, is who they want to be for the whole season. He ended up coming back, I think, in the third period and having another hustle play at his end of the goal. So stuff like that, if they can continue getting that, because they were not getting that last year on a consistent basis. If they can get that on a consistent basis, I could see this team being much better than they were last year.
Sean on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says that game was extremely sloppy by the Preds, who were extremely lucky to leave with the W. Columbus looked like the better team. Now, through the first two periods, the Blue Jackets carried the play. They had the better of the scoring chances. They were getting to the high-danger areas more often. But the Predators, to their credit, turned the tide in the third period. The Predators were the much better team in the third period. They carried the play in the third period. They were taking advantage of Columbus turnovers and turning them into scoring chances. They protected the home plate/slot area quite well. So I'm not sure, Sean, that I would go as far as you did and say that the Predators were extremely lucky to win the game, but they made the necessary adjustments in the third period. And Willie, you had Mike Kelly of SportLogic on the broadcast last night, and he pointed out a tactical change that the Predators made in the third period that helped them control it. What did Mike say?
Well, what he pointed out was that the number one line for Columbus, and I'll bet you, even if you are a pretty, if you consider yourself a pretty hardcore hockey fan, you probably didn't realize how efficient that number one line for Columbus was last year. Sean Monahan and two young Russians, Voronkov and Barchenko. Those two guys are both 25, those young Russians. Those three really did a lot of damage last year, and they started off on Brady Martin, Philip Forsberg, and Ryan O'Reilly's line. That was the matchup. And remember, the home team basically dictates the matchups, and they had a lot of trouble containing that top line for Columbus. But in the third period, it actually started happening in the second period. Some Andrew Brunette started using Michael McCarron's line to match up with that line, and they had a lot more success. And at times, it was even Eric Halla's line that went in there and went head-to-head with them. But in the third period, they were able to shut down the main source of offense for Columbus, and that, I thought, was the key to getting a lead and getting the victory. So am I here to say that they dominated the game last night? Not at all, but these are the types of games they just simply did not win very many of last year. They won a couple, but for this team, with this layout of talent where they are right now, they've got to win a lot of games like this. And when you have UC Saros and you play good structure in front of him, you can win games when you don't have the territorial edge.
Jeff on our text line says, I was actually surprised they overturned the goal for goaltender interference. At the end of the second period, former Predators forward Matthew Olivier scored a goal that could have been a huge momentum shifter. The Predators challenge for goaltender interference. I have stopped pretending to understand what the league is looking for when it comes to goaltender interference. But the Predators were correct. The goal was overturned. They went into the second when they went into the second intermission, tied at one instead of down 2-1. What did you think, Willie, of that play? What did Chris Mason on the broadcast think of that goaltender interference call?
If you really by this time, right, I don't know what year this is, Adam, of goaltender interference video challenge. Maybe 10, 12 years now. Maybe 10, right? Are we in double digits? Is this the 10-year anniversary?
That's a good question. I'm not sure off the
top
of my head.
I think it was in the first 5 years something that was evolving. I think what happened last night now, if you're a video coach, you're pretty confident back in that back room, I would say, on about 7 out of 10 challenges. Maybe 6 out of 10. And last night, I think, fell into the pretty clear cut, because this is what we've been trained to look for as announcers. They trained you on this. The referees have broadcast meetings, and they will bring in referees and tell the announcers what to look for. And if the goalie is in the blue ice, UC Saros, in the blue ice, in his crease, you cannot make contact with him in the blue ice. And that's what Matthew Olivier did. Now, there are a couple of exceptions, one of which is if the player is pushed in. It's like roughing the punter or roughing the kicker in football. If you're blocked into the punter, that's different than if you run into the punter on your own. But Olivier, he was engaged with Justin Barron. You could have even maybe made a loose argument early that Barron guided him into that blue ice. But once Olivier was parked in there, he had time to clear himself out. He even pushed Barron to create space, and that jutted him back into the crease and made contact. And it doesn't have to be intentional. If it's incidental, as long as it's in that blue ice, that goal is going to get waved off. So I thought it was pretty clear-cut. It was interesting, though, the announcers for the Blue Jackets disagreed. And obviously, Dean Evason and Matthew Olivier, with their reaction, disagreed. But I don't know. Honestly, I don't know what they're watching. If that went against the Predators, I guarantee you Chris Mason and I would say, okay, I see it. Incidental contact in the blue ice is goalie interference. Now, had that happened outside of the blue ice, totally different story.
Sean, go ahead, Derek.
Yeah, no, D-Base was very intrigued with this last
year. Yeah, my question was because, listen, I don't know the rules in regards to goaltender interference, and you educated me on it just like you did just a few minutes ago, educated our listeners on it. But I didn't understand because there was a point in that on that video where UC Soros seems to have the player's jersey from the back. Now, if that does happen, it seemed like it did, does that still qualify as goaltender interference if the goaltender is making contact with you? Because it seemed like UC had his jersey sort of like kind of like a, you know, how they hand check in basketball, just on your back.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And not necessarily just to kind of get a gauge of where you're in. And I think that's what he was doing to try to get a gauge on, okay, I'm not, I just need to know where to kind of move when the puck comes. But it did seem as if he had a hand on him, and they were in the blue circle.
Yes. And that is something that is a nuance that I think forever, just like with pass interference in football, there's going to be little things on every play that no two are the same. So you're asking if the goalie initiates the contact, then what's the call? And the rule of thumb basically is the goalie is going to get the benefit of the doubt if he's in his crease. That is his space to play his position. He has to be able to play his position. So they teach the players, don't go in there. If you go in there and there's contact, it doesn't have to be much contact. And there wasn't that much contact last night. It's going to be interference. Outside of the crease, as long as you stay outside of that crease, then if the goalie makes any initiation of contact, he's not going to get that call. The question is that gray area right on the line, on the borderline. Let's say the goalie's skates are in the blue, but maybe he reaches out across the line and does what you're saying, Derek, UC Soros did, which kind of hand check him in the back. That has happened some. But in this case, Soros was clearly in the crease. The contact happened in that crease slash blue ice. Mm-hmm. No goal. And that was a big play because that was probably the period that Columbus outplayed the Predators the most. The Predators had a 5-on-3 in that period, and they couldn't quite cash in. That was really the only offense they generated. The whole rest of the period, the Blue Jackets were really bringing it to the Predators. So if they had capped that off with that goal, the third period might have been a different story. But good challenge by the Predators.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We will take your reaction to the Predators' season opening win 2-1 against the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Predators are back in action tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena against the newly christened Utah Mammoth, formerly the Utah Hockey Club, formerly the Arizona Coyotes. Predators and
formerly the Winnipeg, the original Winnipeg Jets.
Well, you could say formerly the Phoenix Coyotes after the Arizona Coyotes or before the Arizona Coyotes, then the Winnipeg Jets. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Derek, of course, is in Las Vegas because the Titans are in Las Vegas to take on the Raiders on Sunday. Can the Titans do the unthinkable and win consecutive games for the first time in nearly 3 years? We will discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. If you are looking for a good spot to watch the Titans game or other NFL games on Sunday, then you should come to Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, home of the 29-degree beer, enjoying 1025 The Game for the pregame show before the Titans take on the Raiders. I will be co-hosting that with our friend Chris Sanders. The pregame show is brought to you by Parma Tractor and Equipment and Old National Bank.
We got to learn how to have success. We don't know how to have success. We started off too slow. All phases of the ball, from top to bottom. I mean, that first half wasn't Titan football, and I don't know what it was. Like, we, from top to bottom, from everybody who had a part of this game, we didn't come in. Felt like we was hungover. We were hungover from success, and we didn't come out ready to play and go down 28-0. It's going to be hard to win in the National Football League, so we have to be better.
What do you feel like guys have to learn about success? What could be different?
We can't have hangovers. At the end of the day, we got to learn how to have success. And, I mean, we're in a situation where we have to stack wins, and we can't be hungover. We can't be hungover on success. yes, we beat the Texans. Hooray. It's all about trying to build. We're trying to build off that. And we didn't do that today. And, you know, and trying to dig ourselves out the hole, that didn't help us today at all. From, like I said, that's from top to bottom, not just the players. Like I said, that start with everybody in this building, you know, from top to bottom.
That was Jeffrey Simmons last season after the Titans followed up their win against the Texans with an egg at the Commanders. And Jeffrey
you
Simmons...
You mean that wasn't in Vegas? He wasn't talking about the movie The Hangover?
No, he was not talking about the movie The Hangover. But he said the Titans were hungover from success the previous week. I'm hearing... Jamiroquai, which makes me think that perhaps they're playing Napoleon Dynamite on the big screen at the Circa Hotel.
I know, it's interfering with my techno pop. I had New Order coming in, and now it's quickly switched to Jamiroquai.
Yes.
The pool party is just taking over.
Yes. Like, but as the Titans prepare to face the Raiders in Las Vegas, where Derek Mason is right now, I was reminded of that soundbite from Jeffrey Simmons from a year ago. The Titans go to Houston. They win a game. The following week, they go to Washington, and that game is over basically as soon as it started. And that was Jeffrey Simmons after the game talking about the Titans being hungover from success. So let's hope the Titans are not hungover from success again after defeating the Cardinals last week as they take on the Raiders on Sunday. A couple of notes. J.C. Latham is expected to play on Sunday. He will be listed as questionable on the injury report, but he is expected to play. So a big return for the Tennessee Titans. J.C. Latham appears good to go for the Titans on Sunday in Las Vegas. On the other side, Brock Bowers, the young, outstanding tight end for the Raiders, is expected to be out again. He missed last week against the Colts with a knee injury. He is expected to miss this game as well, according to Raiders head coach Pete Carroll. So, Derek, how can the Titans do the unthinkable and pull off a winning streak for the first time in nearly 3 years? The last time the Titans won consecutive games, you have to go all the way back to November 13th through 17th, 2022, when they won at home against Denver. They went to Green Bay and won on Thursday Night Football before losing the final seven games of the season. So how, Derek Mason, do the Titans avoid being hungover by success and pull off another win Sunday where you are right now in Las Vegas?
You want to keep it simple? Score and don't let them score. That's how you do it. No.
I need a little bit more than that, Derek Mason.
No, I think they got to find some way to play like they did in the fourth quarter for four quarters in this game. For whatever reason, this team came out extremely flat. It was almost like the hangover from the Houston game, and they didn't decide to wake up and start playing until the fourth quarter. I mean, it took a fluke play, in a sense, to sort of spark that. So they got to find a way to tap into that very, very early. And I think what Bo has to do, what he did last game, is use multiple sets. Keep them thinking. Keep the Las Vegas Raiders thinking on defense. Because if you keep them thinking on defense and you give a little tempo like I think they can, then that's better for your quarterback, I believe. So they play like they did in the first and in fourth quarter and in the last game, and they play in this game to start off the game. That's how you keep yourself from repeating what happened to you last year. It baffled me that he said that last year. Because I'm like, man, it's not like y'all have been winning like 10, 20 straight or something. Y'all won two games. And all of a sudden, now it's a hangover. I hope that type of mentality is still not in the locker room, where you win one game out of your first five and then all of a sudden the next game after that is a hangover. I don't think that's going to happen. But in order for it not to happen, I think they got to find a way to, you know, start off fast, get that thing going like they did in the fourth quarter, move Cam around, use multiple sets. And on defense, they got to have to stop the run. That's first and foremost. And if they can do that, I think they put themselves in a better position to win two in a row than not.
T-Mace, Bowers did not play last week, and they got smoked. They scored only six against the Raiders. I'm sorry, against the Colts. They got blown away. I think 40-6 was the final score.
Yes.
What does not having Bowers in there do for the Titans' defense as they try to match up? Like, is this a chance for the defense to put the offense in a good spot?
Of course. I mean, he's their number one weapon. He's a guy that poses the matchup problem with defenses. Again, he's too big and physical for a cornerback, and he's majority of the times too fast for a safety or a linebacker. And he knows how to run routes. So not having your number one threat now, that takes away your quarterback first option, and then you make him prove that these other guys can play. But a lot of what they do runs through what he can do at the tight end position. He's just a, to me, he's an extension of what, you know, they do on the outside as far as the wide receivers. He has that ability not only to line up with his hands in the dirt or in the slot, but he has the ability to line up outside too. And when you got a guy that is multiple like that and you don't have him no more, it changes your offense.
J.C. Latham is back in, and that is one of the number one things that I think I'm looking for, is to see, hopefully, if he's healthy. Because I feel like, my theory anyway, is in that game against the Broncos where he eventually left, I don't think he was ever right to start with. He wasn't playing well before they took him out. But if he can be a stabilizing force, how big could that be for the offensive line, especially when you're blocking an elite rusher? I don't know that I would say the Raiders have an elite front four, but they've got an elite rusher in Crosby that they're going to have to handle. Having Latham has got to help.
Well, it does, because now they're going to have to pick and choose which side they put him on. If Latham's not there, I would tend to believe that Max Crosby would line up to the Titans' right, his left, a lot more to go against the inexperience at the right tackle. But if you have a healthy J.C. Latham, maybe they look to do something a little different. Maybe they look to go to Moore's side. Moore played pretty good last week. But for the most part, he hasn't been worth, you know, the money that they brought him in. Now, it's a long season. He can get better starting from last week. But, you know, having J.C. Latham back there, it helps solidify their offensive line. Because if you look at it, Zeitler's playing well. Skoronski's playing well. Cushenberry is coming back into form. I don't think he's where he was prior to the knee injury. I don't think he's still there. And Moore, hopefully, I'm looking at the remainder games he has left. I'm not sure how many elite pass rushers he has left. So if that's the case, then we may see more of what we saw last week of Moore. We may see more of that than we did the first 3 or 4 weeks.
By the way, the Titans will also have a new kicker on Sunday against the Raiders. Joey Sly ruled out with a calf injury. So Matthew Wright will be kicking for the Titans in Las Vegas. Wright was 4 of 4 in 2 games for the Titans in 2024 in his career. He's appeared in 29 games, 55 of 63, 87.3%, including 7 of 11 from beyond 50 yards.
Okay. So it sounds like he's got at least some of the right stuff.
Ha! I see what you did there, Willie. I see what you did there. Richie from White House on our text line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, says, they didn't have a hangover. Good old Jarvis Brownlee said, since other guys won't say it, I'll say it. It was too cold. Well, you know what? One, Jarvis Brownlee isn't on the team anymore. And two, I don't think it's cold in Las Vegas. Derek, is it cold in Las Vegas?
Oh, no. It's not cold.
It gets a little chilly at night.
It's not hot either, so.
But I don't think you're going to have the same weather conditions in Las Vegas as you did late last season in the Washington, D.C. area. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Your thoughts on the Titans' upcoming matchup on Sunday against the Las Vegas Raiders. 615-737-1025. Our show is presented by Bax Homeworks, which transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. Get a free estimate at BAXHomeworks.com. D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Derek Mason, Willie Donick, Adam Vingen here with you. Derek is live out at Circa in Las Vegas. as the Titans prepare to take on the Raiders this Sunday afternoon. The Las Vegas Raiders opened the season with a win against the Patriots, have since dropped four consecutive games. They are turnover prone. The Raiders, -6 in turnover differential, the second worst in the NFL, ahead of only the winless New York Jets. Geno Smith with a league-high 9 interceptions.
Nine times.
In 5 games, Geno Smith has been picked off, so we'll see if the Titans can take advantage of that. Let's go to our text line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. One texter says, Cam's thinking too much. He needs to take what the defense gives him by running when the opportunities are there to move the sticks. He's focused too much on trying to be a pocket passer instead of exploiting defenses that don't respect his mobility. He may have Warren Moon's jersey, but he's not Warren Moon. He can run, so he needs to take those free yards. That will add an element of surprise that could enable this, could help kickstart our anemic offense. I think you're missing a word there, texter. But that was one unnamed texter on Cam Ward.
You know, I still want to see if he can run. I'm not convinced that Cam Ward can run. I would like to see it more. His escapability so far, and he has played, of course, a grand total of 5 games, has not impressed me. D-Mace, I think, is more optimistic than I am. But I think that's, if he's got that tool, I kind of agree with the texter. He needs to use that tool a little bit more. Not recklessly. Will Levis, I think we know he was not good at it. Ryan Tannehill was a great example of a guy that ran effectively. Ward has not run effectively at all as of yet.
I'm not sure if they are, you know, trying to sear that in him to either stay in a pocket or to run. But it does seem like he would rather make a play with inside the pocket. Or behind the line of scrimmage, let's say that, than to take off and run. I believe he can run. I just think that he chooses not to run. He comes from a place where he's going to try to give his wide receivers every second he can get to allow them to get open. And because this receiving core hasn't played consistently this season, he's had to do that. He's had to wait, and he's had to find, you know, avenues outside the pocket. When the offensive line starts to block better, I think you'll start to see him do a little bit more. But more importantly, I think he wants to be able to operate within the pocket. But he has to understand in this game, like, the object is to get 10 yards each and every opportunity you can get. So if it's not there in passing, then you run the football. Again, there was a prime time for him to run the football last game. The middle of the field was wide open, and he did not take advantage of it. I think that would come with time. I think that's something that Brian Callahan and the coaches probably, you know, had him look at over and over again and say, hey, listen, we understand that you want to make pockets behind the line of scrimmage or in the pocket. But if there's a chance to run, the object is to get 10 yards and get another first down. Take it. Get down when you need to. Protect yourself. But don't just run recklessly out there.
By the way, the NFL credits Cam Ward with 9 scramble rush attempts this season, 0 designed rush attempts.
But the bottom line is, like, we pulled up his running stats the other day. I think he's got like 30 yards or something like that. It just hasn't been effective in the context, whether designed or not, designed or scramble. I'm looking for escapes. Now, my eye test tells me even plays where you're shuffling up in the pocket, you're buying time, and then throwing, which is a huge part of a quarterback's game. Think about how great Patrick Mahomes is. Think about how great Steve McNair was in that category. I'm sure there's an analytic that would tell you, you know, extended play throws. Ward supposedly is that's something he should be good at. I know he did that a lot in Miami. All the highlight films were filled with plays where he extended plays and threw it. I don't think he's been particularly effective in that as of yet. So I go back to the word escapability. I hope he can improve in that area. He's not quite as quick as I thought he would be in the pocket at extending plays or even using his legs to, like Derek said, just find a way to move the chains.
So earlier we played a clip from last season after the Titans lost in Washington after beating Houston. And Jeffrey Simmons talked about the Titans, quote-unquote, being hungover from success. Earlier this week, Brian Callahan was asked about that game in Washington and any lessons he may take from that game as the Titans prepare for the Raiders. Here's what Brian Callahan had to say.
After the win in Houston last year, you guys went to Washington, didn't go very well. Do you learn anything from that experience in terms of getting the team back this week?
Yeah, I mean, I'll go back and look at my notes and make sure I'm not doing any of the things that I did the last time. I don't think it was anything really dramatically different, to be honest with you. It was, I think we that game was a product of some early turnovers that broke it open pretty quickly. But we got to be ready to go play again. And I think my point to you guys after the game is the same as it was to the team today, that it's one game. And we're trying to win more games and stack wins and stack the process. And that's our focus. And it feels great to win, but we also aren't – I mean, I'm not satisfied with all of it, and they shouldn't be either because we got to play better. Earlier in the game, you know, there's the good teams. If you give them a 21-6 lead in most games in this league, you're going to have a hard time coming back. And thankfully we found a way to do it, but that's not the way we want to live, nor is it sustainable. And we got to find a way to play better earlier. And I think that's the key. And having the same mentality about how we feel after a loss when you're correcting the tape and making sure you're correcting what needs to get corrected.
That was Brian Callahan earlier this week. He'll have to go back and look at his notes.
I mean, it's a ridiculous thing. I mean, just I don't – nobody tries to avoid being hard. You work hard. You play, you prepare for your game the best you can compare. Like, it's, to me, there's no connection between the two. They're also playing a team that's not nearly as good as the opponent was last year. This was when Washington was, you know, taking, to a degree, taking the league by storm relative to what Washington has been for 30 years, right? That was the best Washington team in, I don't know how long. When you get down to it?
A couple decades.
So really, if you're hung over, I'm more worried about the Las Vegas scene, people not going out on Saturday night. But we all want to see how they respond after having a little more success. And to finish the point on Cam Ward, he's got 14 carries for 36 yards. And this is maybe the more important thing. Success rate, 36%. Now, what's a successful run? It means, obviously, on third or fourth down, you have to pick up the first down. So if it's third and one and you get one, it's only 1 yard, but it's success.
You're keeping the offense on schedule.
Yes. If it's third and 10 and you get 9 yards, but it's not a success because you didn't get the first down. So you got to get 40% of the yards remaining. So on first and 10, you got to get at least 4 yards. So you see that's how they do it. So he has been an ineffective runner for the most part. Only 36 yards, period, and only 36% success rate. So we need to see improvement there. But this is what, when I watch him week in and week out, this is what I'm trying to figure out. Is he going to get better in that area, or is he just not quite as quick and effective with his legs as you would hope?
Ron on our text line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, says, "Did y'all see Cam Scataboo last night? I said during the draft that the Titans should have drafted Scataboo. He could have really helped Cam spark the offense. Another draft miss. Both Cams could be leading this organization to the future." And we'll get to the Giants in just a matter of moments. But let me remind you that Cam Scataboo, there was a scat trick last night, by the way. 3 touchdowns for Cam Scataboo. So let's call it a scat trick. Get it?
Very nice.
We'll call it a scat trick.
But how many picks do you think the Titans have? They missed on this guy. I mean, there was
he was a fourth-round pick. So okay, every team missed on him multiple times.
Right. So let's just take – let's cherry
pick. Except for the Giants, I
guess. Let's cherry pick all the best players from each round and say the Titans should have picked.
Yeah, I can't go there, Ron.
Mr. Hindsight.
Derek,
but the Jackson Dart thing is an interesting story developing here.
We will talk about Jackson Dart in just a matter of moments. But Derek, as we continue to preview the game against the Raiders, you heard what Brian Callahan had to say. You heard what Jeffrey Simmons said at the end of last season.
if you were counseling the Titans not to have a letdown against the Raiders, what would you tell them?
You don't have the right to have a letdown. You don't. You haven't earned the right to have a letdown. Even if you won five in a row, you still don't have the right to have a letdown. Why? Because we're paying you too much damn money, and these fans are paying too much to come to see you play for you to have a letdown. That's why you shouldn't have a letdown. You haven't won enough to have a letdown. That's what I would tell them as a coach, because you're being brutally honest with them. Not that you're not a good team, or I don't believe that you're a good team. You hadn't proved it consistently yet. So you have no right. If somebody, after a game, if the Titans lose this game and if somebody come out and say it was a hangover, that person needs to be cut. They need to be cut the very next day. And I don't care who it is. They need to be cut, because there's no reason why a 1-4 team, even a team last year, should have had a hangover after winning one game. You don't do that when you haven't won many. So you don't want that to be sort of the attitude going into this game. I don't think it's going to be. I think guys like Jeffrey Simmons that was there last year, Calvin Ridley's got guys like that. They understand how it can happen, and how it can happen very fast, even after a win. So hopefully those guys are keeping the locker room accountable in regards to that. But they have no right to think they can take a game off. One, again, you haven't earned that right. And then two, I mean, people are paying good money to watch you and to see you play. They don't want to hear you took a day off or you just had a hangover.
Let's quickly go to Dustin in Hopkinsville on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Dustin, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. I was the one called this morning, and I just want to clear something up. I have Cam Ward's back still. I do think he has a very high ceiling. But it's a conversation, because there were six picks that New York offered you, and then they didn't even take Jackson Dart to the second. Or what was it, a third? I don't know where they took him.
Jackson Dart was – they traded back up into the first round and drafted him in the 20s in the first round, if I'm not mistaken.
There you go. Surely we would have had a pick to go back and get Jackson Dart if they got Cam Ward. And right now he's looking like his level is at least Tannehill, in my opinion. At least that. Okay? And you go get another great – pieces around him – y'all can sit here and say we should have got Cam Scataboo, but y'all have to realize you can only get so many good players. You got to go after the one good player you want in the first. Then those players come off the board. You, like you said, you can't just cherry pick all these guys that are doing great. We'd all love to have another Derrick Henry, Cam Scataboo, and I will compare him. That dude is a dog. He hits you when you hit him. But like I said, I do have Cam's back. But it is a conversation to be had. There are six picks that we let them offer us and didn't take it. On the other side of that, look at what our rookies are doing. Look at Borgonzi. I think we're going to be in good shape. And when it does go off, I don't think it's going to be a long drawn out thing. I think it's going to happen like a flip of a light switch, like it did in the fourth quarter. And we're just going to see all these little toys that Borgonzi gave us just go off the map, and we're going to be talked about on ESPN and NFL. Either we're going to dumpster fire it even further, or we're going to just fly off the map by midseason this season, I think.
Thank you for the call, Dustin. And we will pick up that conversation on the other side, 615-737-1025, because something did happen in the NFL last night that had me wondering what Titans fans are feeling right now. And we will discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. This Sunday, the NFL Game of the Week, Dallas versus Carolina at noon on Sports Talk 830. NFL Game of the Week is presented by Circa Sportsbook Kentucky and Macero in 12 South.